Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Lieutenant General Stephen Botell, Chief Information Officer and G6, the Department of the Army. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Paul. Great to see you this morning and appreciate the opportunity to talk about what we're doing in our service.
Great. And also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Chuck Proe. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, General, perhaps you could begin by describing the mission of the Department of Army's Chief Information Office, G6.
That's a great question. The CIO and G6 of the Army really has multiple roles. As a CIO, we hold that traditional role, which is providing IT services across the force. Now, when we say across the force for the Army, that's significantly different in some corporate worlds. That is global requirements for IT, wherever you are in the world, anytime, any place. And generally and quite often in today's environment, that is in a place where there is no infrastructure. Under the G6 role, we actually provide the soldiers, the young men and women who operate many of those services, be it in Afghanistan or Djibouti, Horn of Africa, South America, or here in the continental United States.
Tell us about the people on your team, especially the skills.
Skill set is a varied skill set, but they do have a common core, and that is somewhere they're involved in the IT industry. We do have those people that are in the resourcing business, but really in the IT industry, and that is all the way from software and computers up to transmission systems via satellite, tropospheric scatter, microwave, or handheld tactical radios.
And how about the size of what you're taking place in terms of a budget? Don't want any secrets, but it's always interesting to put what's going on in the service in the context of other Fortune 500 companies.
Yeah, our IT budget is about $6 billion, and that runs over our POM. So it's a significant budget in the size of business.
And then you were describing how combat operations in Iraq and Afghanistan alike are involved. How do they affect the budget?
We have the normal budget that we have in peacetime, although our budget doesn't significantly change, although it's increased with the current supplementals in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. So those are usually supplementals on top of our normal budget, where we buy and push services, be they lease services of satellite services or information services, or actually buying systems, commercial systems, to put on the ground in Pakistan or Afghanistan or Iraq or other places.
A while back, we interviewed Kevin Carroll, the Program Executive for Enterprise Information Systems for the Army, and he talked to us about how his organization was now falling under the CIO G6. Could you talk to us about the reorganization?
Sure. The Army has, like many of the services, Program Executive Officers. Those are the acquirers. They're the ones that award the contracts for research and development and eventual production, whatever the system is, be it an airplane or a helicopter, or in Kevin Carroll's place, it's Enterprise Services. Most of the work that Kevin Carroll does in PEOEIS, and he would tell you 50 to 60% of the work is resource or funded by my organization. Those are large end satellite systems in Baghdad or enterprise systems around the world.
So by putting it under the CIO, does that make things more common? Or
makes it much more common. There are about 12 program executive officers in the Army, one for aviation to buy helicopters, one for ground combat systems that buys tanks, another one for missiles. And it was a natural fit for Kevin Carroll and EIS to roll underneath PEO or underneath the CIO G6. The other 11 PEOs currently work under Lieutenant General Joe Yakovac, and he's responsible for buying those services.
Good morning, General. As CIO and G6 for the Army, what are your chief roles and responsibilities?
Probably the chief response, well, several chief roles and responsibilities. Kind of separated as the CIO, I do provide the enterprise services and the direction and the guidance. And that is to ensure that the user at whatever level, be at the tactical level, the young soldier in the field, or back in the United States, whether he's operating at a depot or an office or behind a desk, has the appropriate IT services. That means bandwidth to the desktop or to the soldier moving across the battlefield or to the attack helicopter. Provide all of those services. Some of those are lease services, some of those are products, and some of those are buying it at an enterprise level.
Can you share with us a few of the highlights prior to you becoming CIO and G6 of the Army?
It's a long road to be the CIO G6, and I will tell you, if you look at my predecessors, each one of them has had a different path. My immediate predecessor was Lieutenant General Pete Cuviello. He came up pretty much more of a traditional communications role. But in my case, Started out as an inductee back in 1969 and elected to join the Army, and started out in nuclear weapons electronic repair. At one point in time, went to Artillery Officer Candidate School, probably because I had reasonable math scores. And in the wind down of Vietnam, I also had a background in electronics, electrical engineering, and was shifted over in communications and electronics. Spent quite a few years in that. Most of us spent a lot of years initially in combat divisions, and I was in the 3rd Infantry Division, in the 8th Infantry Division, in 5th Corps, 7th Corps, in the United States, in Korea, and of course various places around the world. At a certain point, I went into the acquisition business, and that is looking at buying products from the commercial world. And when you get into that business, you kind of make a shift. You're no longer primarily working communication. You're more working general electronics, software, computers. And probably the defining event was about 87, when the PCs first started to hit the market. And I worked in an organization where they were coming in, and came home one day and I said, I think these new things called personal computers are going to go somewhere. And spent many nights and evenings doing some very, very basic programming and rebuilding and building computers, and have been in it ever since.
When you look back at these experiences, are there any one you talk about when you talk about your career that, you know, prepare you for where you are today, perhaps from going from a doer to a managing a doer, or understanding the, you know, the role that you would play as a higher ranking officer?
Paul, I think that's a great question, and one of the most difficult things we do is, as our chief says, is build the bench, and that is identify those people who need to take your job should you depart that job, or who your replacement's going to be. And I don't think we do that at all well, or as well as we could, both in industry and in government. And one of the things we do as senior officers is we look out across the landscape of those people who work for us or who are around us, and try to identify those young people who are starting to broaden their horizons and no longer looking down at just doing the function that they're trained to do, but start looking at where the Army is going, where the nation is going, where the world is going, look at the geopolitical environment, and how to start to apply the technologies to where we need to go. Not where we are today, but where do you need to go in the future? And so identifying those people is one of the things we as leaders need to do, and then mentor those people. You know, we seldom want to send our superstars off to school for a year or 6 months. We want to keep them close to us. And we need to make those hard calls and send those people out and make sure they get the right experience, they get the right schools, they get the right exposure, so we can bring them up to take our job and hopefully do a better job of it than we have done.
I have a pretty good idea from your description of career what drew you to public service, but what's kept you in? I imagine from time to time you might have thought about going into the private sector. What's kept you?
I think a combination of two things. You go along for a certain period of time and you do it strictly because you really enjoy the feeling of accomplishment. And in my business, on a day-to-day basis, and some days are better than others, but you generally feel that you've accomplished something and you're pushing this technology the right direction. And I think probably over the last few years, it's probably been a knowledge that since I had been in this business for a long time, I'd been a program executive officer, I'd been a project manager, I'd built systems, that I thought that I had a bench of knowledge where I could apply those or help apply those to the young soldiers in the field and in the current war and what I believe will be the future wars on terrorism.
Tell us about some of your personal style in terms of managing and leading. For example, communication. A lot of people talk to us in this show about the importance of getting your message out and communicating to your team. But yet you have a big team and it's spread all over the world. How do you do that?
One of the things we do, and one of the things I've tried to do, is right up front, have a very narrow set of objectives that everyone can understand. 6 or 7 things that you want to accomplish in the period of time you're going to be there, 2 or 3 years or whatever it may be, and don't change or adjust those unless absolutely necessary. And then you will find that if you put that out to the senior leaders, that you'll find that everywhere around the world globally. They all understand what you're trying to do and where you're trying to go, and be consistent. You know, you need to know where the boss is trying to go. You may not agree with him, but you need to know where he's trying to go. And the second thing is visit them as often as possible. I don't believe we need to micromanage these professionals. They know how to do good work and make things happen. Draw the white lines in the road, give them the objective in the other direction. Surround yourself with some really good managers and senior people, and I have a superstar staff. And periodically check on them and praise them when they do a good job and give them guidance if they don't. But I am extremely pleased where the Army people are going around the world.
How do you think about the speed of decision-making in government? Is it fast enough? Is it slow enough? I know we talked to a lot of people who've come from the private sector who've joined government and are somewhat surprised at the speed by which decisions are made. How do you think about that?
I think we're in a hybrid right now. In peacetime, you know, we build a very strong armed forces, but we do it very methodically and we do it within the system. The exponential growth in the IT world, specifically in IP, XML, web services that's happening around us, does not lend itself to making decisions and putting those systems in the field as quick as we want. You know, every circuit board I buy for a system in 6 months is outdated and there's a new one to replace it. Our process does not support that. Having said that, in the current war with the nation and the state it's in today and still in national emergency after 9-1-1, we are able to do things very, very quickly based upon supplementals and a wartime environment and bring systems in very quickly, replace old systems. So I would suggest today we can make a decision today and make things happen in a matter of sometime hours or days. That is not true in a peacetime environment, and that's okay. In a peacetime environment, you want that structure. You want to build that underpinnings and that base to have a stable Army or stable Navy or Air Force. But right now, we can make decisions very, very quickly and execute very quickly with industry.
That's an interesting point about the speed. What does the term network-centric operations mean, and why are we hearing so much about it these days? We'll ask General Stephen Battelle of the U.S. Army to explain this to us when the Business of Government Hour continues.